I'm a changed man, Alexa.
But when he offers to help...
Hey, I could be your man on the inside.
He conceals his connection to the victim.
She gave Will $2,000 the day before she died.
My Life is Murder.
Saturday at 8 on WTTW.
Let's stay calm. I was wrongly convicted of murder.
I really need you to do something for me.
Patience, we haven't got much time.
Sunday at 7 on WTTW.
Hi, Chicago. I'm at the Garfield Park Conservatory, and you're watching WTTW.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Brandis Friedman in for Nick Blumberg. Chicago Public School Board members pass a nearly $10 billion budget, but not without some 11th hour theatrics.
Let's show families that we will leave no stone unturned to fight for the funding their students need and deserve.
Yes, let's fight. I agree. Let's go. Let's get it. I am down with you, but let's not cut our nose to spite our face.
A last-minute budget amendment includes an additional $150 million in state revenue that may not come through.
Our team members watch students sitting together at lunch, playing board games, and talking with friends. They were laughing and simply being kids again.
Governor J.B. Pritzker signs a bill banning cell phones in Illinois public schools from bell to bell.
Look, I hope to see Mayor Johnson come off the sideline, and I hope to see the people who support him get out here and pass a petition. If he's not going to pass one, I'll pass one for him.
Chicago Teachers Union President Stacey Davis Gates endorses another term for Mayor Brandon Johnson before he's announced plans for re-election. It comes as candidates for Chicago mayor and city council start collecting signatures to get on the ballot.
We've seen significant, more intense storms year to date than we have all of 2025.
Meanwhile, major storms this week downed trees and flooded basements across the Chicago area and caused power outages for hundreds of thousands. Plus, reaction to the 7 Save-A-Lot stores closing across Chicago and how city partners are helping out affected older residents. And Chicago's biggest music festival, Lollapalooza, returns to Grant Park this weekend. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Michael Liptrot of Block Club Chicago, WTTW's own Heather Sharon, Violet Miller of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Brendan Moore with Capital News Illinois. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us. So, Heather, Chicago school board members, as we just heard, rejecting this budget proposal from CEO Macklin King and instead passing an amended nearly $10 billion plan. What's outlined in this budget?
Well, the big point of contention was about $150 million. Now, without that money, Macklin King says the school board is going to have to lay off teachers. They're going to have to cut programs. That is just how the math is turning out. The school board said, no, we should demand that money from the General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker, and we should not prepare to lay off teachers or cut programs. So now they have said, hey, Governor Pritzker, hey, General Assembly, don't want to see teachers laid off, don't want to see class sizes grow. The ball is now in your court. Now, this isn't the only pot of money that isn't actually in CPS's hands. It also relies on $285 million from the city in property tax revenues that they're hoping the city will send to them after declaring a significant amount of money to be in surplus in the accounts the city holds. Now, there's no guarantee that that money is going to actually materialize at any point. So there are a lot of unanswered questions for CPS and parents who are about to send their kids back to school.
Right. Go ahead.
Definitely a lot of speculation. And one thing I think is notable also of the $285 in tax money, TIF funds that CPS is speculating on this $10 billion budget, it's also notable that last year they received around $500 million. But still, it's not guaranteed that they will receive a certain amount because last year the city got a historic $1 billion TIF surplus. But if it does keep on that track, they could potentially expect more, but still, it's a lot up in the air to speculate on.
And part of what's going on is really a sort of a fight between the Chicago Teachers Union and the Service Employees International Union. Now, originally, SEIU objected to the superintendent's plan to furlough employees for 5 days. And they said, no, just count on more TIF revenue. Now, the superintendent agreed to do that, which prompted CTU to renew their demands that they ask for more money from the state. Essentially, if we can't, you know, sort of expect more money from the city, why can't we expect more money from the state? And this was a little bit of political push and pull. And again, kids, parents, teachers, employees caught in the middle.
Right. And specifically board members, they're counting on $150 million in funding from the state. Brendan, what support, if any, has the board garnered from state lawmakers?
So this isn't a new conversation. So Mayor Johnson, the CTU, have been down in Springfield for the past few years trying to get more money from the state, trying to get more money from the state's evidence-based funding formula for schools, for CPS, but largely without success, because the state has been putting more money into schools, $300 million every year, about $2.5 billion since evidence-based funding first came into fruition 10 years ago. But obviously, it's not enough. Schools are not at adequacy. CPS is at 73%. Something changed this week. So House Speaker Chris Welch, in a meeting with the Illinois Federation of Teachers, said that
run by
Stacey Davis-Gates,
CTU president.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And he committed to leading the effort in the veto session in November to getting more funding for CPS and presumably for more funding for schools across the state. Now, he didn't run that by the governor, didn't run that by Senate President Don Harmon. It caught everybody a little bit by surprise. And obviously, some context here, the speaker right now is embroiled in a little bit of a scandal for how he handled ex-rep Harry Benton's sexual harassment case. So maybe trying to shore up his standing with some allies, notably the CTU and the IFT. A lot of progressive lawmakers would like to work on this, but they haven't really done a lot since they left Springfield in May. You know, when they did transit a few years ago, there were, you know, subject matter hearings and negotiations. That hasn't happened yet. So it was some positive words if you're Stacey Davis-Gates and the teachers union about momentum in Springfield, but right now they're just words. Not a lot of action's been taken.
And if this happens during the October veto session, you don't need just a majority of votes in the General Assembly. You need a super, super majority of votes. And downstate lawmakers, suburban lawmakers, are not usually real eager to give Chicago more money than their own districts get. And, you know, I think if you sort of said, well, everybody gets $150 million more, we're talking $700 million. Now,
it's also not how equity works.
Sure. But, you know, the state is also sort of strapped for cash. And I'm pretty sure that there aren't $700 million stuck in a couch cushion somewhere, which means that there are going to be really hard decisions to be made once they get back in session.
I was talking on the sidelines with some state reps, just off the record, on background, and even the most progressive lawmakers told me that there is no way a CPS-only package passes in Springfield. Just the votes are not there. So the $150 million that is budgeted by CPS would have to be even more to account for schools across the state. And as you said, Heather, the state doesn't have a lot of money just lying around. And Governor J.B. Pritzker today was asked about this, and he basically said, well, I look forward to seeing Speaker Welch's plan, kind of putting the ball in the speaker's court to come up with something, because the budget they passed in May does not have a lot of wiggle room.
Real quick, what happened? Go ahead, Michael.
I was going to say, it's just a good point you bring up about the supermajority, because what you brought up earlier when it comes to downstate and the suburbs, even though the legislature may have a majority Democratic sensibilities, it's not majority Chicago. And when thinking about just this hyper-Chicago legislation, this hyper-Chicago package, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be very hard to get that buy-in. Yeah. And I think a lot of times, especially here in the city, we can think about state politics in terms of Chicago, but it's like downstate and Springfield, that's something that's probably people are tired of, mm-hmm. annoyed of, Chicago mm-hmm. dominating so much of the legislature.
So, all right, Mayor Johnson supporters, they have begun circulating petitions on his behalf, even though he still hasn't made it official. He's not announced yet, Violet, that he is going to seek that second term. What does that say about where his campaign stands?
I think the fact that Janulius has such a head start here, so many other candidates really have such a head start, even, you know, some of the smaller ones are, you know, really starting to get out there. I just, you know, it it doesn't tell me that, you know, he's kind of ready to divert focus to the campaign trail yet. I think that we're all maybe dreading the mailers and the advertisements and things. So
what are you talking about?
You know, wishful thinking. Maybe that's just him trying to delay that, as we all are. But, you know, again, it seems to me like, you know, it's long past time to jump on that and to start, you know, getting out in front of it. And so I'll be curious to see with this announcement Sunday that, you know, nobody knows what is it about, you know, that maybe Mayor Johnson will jump in afterwards.
Well, I'll push back just a little bit, because all the way back in 2019, Rahm Emanuel didn't tell us whether he was going to run for a third term or not until after Labor Day. Now, state law has changed, everything's accelerated a month, so we are still early in the marathon that will be the 2027 mayoral and aldermanic race. Please let me hang on to that as long as I can. But, you know, the moment he announces, you're right, he not only is mayor, he is then candidate seeking re-election. And that changes my coverage, that changes all of ours coverage. And I think when you're an incumbent, you sort of want to stretch that power of incumbency as long as you can. Now, will that change on Sunday when a very well-financed, very well-known candidate perhaps gets in the race?
We don't know what he's going to do on Sunday.
Come back and tune in on Monday at 5:30 and 10.
If I may push a little bit on your push on Violet, it begs the question of, with a candidate that is speculated to have such momentum, to not be an official candidate like Janulius has, how much longer can Johnson tease or fall back on declaring when, as of at the end of Q2, you have a $22 million in fundraising compared to $600,000 in fundraising? And the longer Johnson puts off jumping back in the ring, how big of momentum can he get to match or even come close to that in terms of fundraising and campaign funds beyond strictly being the incumbent?
Just throwing this out there, is it possible he's not running again?
Sure.
If Mayor Rahm Emanuel, you mentioned, for example, waited so late to say, I'm not gonna, is it possible that Johnson's doing the same thing? Because if you're not gonna, no rush.
I would be surprised. He is governing like a candidate. He introduced a renter's rights ordinance that sort of spoke directly to his progressive base. He has defended his handling of the migrant crisis. He has demanded more money for CPS. He has demanded more money for violence interruption efforts. And he has sort of pushed back on suggestions that he should not be allowed to name the next superintendent of police. Now, in retrospect, you could sort of look back, and hindsight being 2020, sort of see Rahm Emanuel sort of stepping back a little bit. It was a different time. The Laquan McDonald scandal was sort of in full bloom. So it's, you know, six one hand, half dozen the other. Lori Lightfoot also sort of waited until sort of she had to announce. She filed her petitions on the very last day in 2023. So I think that, you know, sort of this media moment perhaps is sort of demanding that people sort of declare and tell us, and we want to know. And I don't think that they necessarily sort of work on our schedule, although it would be nice, of course. And of course, the mayor is welcome to make his announcement on Chicago Tonight. should he decide to do that?
I always say I will believe it when they file their petitions and we're past the period where they can withdraw. We've seen some shenanigans in recent years there. And the point about money, I mean, yes, the mayor does not have a lot of money, especially compared to Alexi Janulius and to several of the other candidates. But money's not the end-all, be-all. And he's never been a fairly prolific fundraiser.
He has not.
He's, you know, been funded in the past by the Chicago Teachers Union, some of the public sector unions, and I imagine at least some of them will still be with him and fund him, even if they also have some school board races to fund. But I think that he has the benefit of incumbency, and once he announces for re-election, he has the bully pulpit.
Yeah.
You know, he's the mayor.
Even this week, you know, CTU President Stacey Davis Gates saying that she hopes, you know, that Mayor Johnson will, quote, come off the sideline in the mayoral race, and volunteering to go pass petitions for him if he won't do it. Michael, how significant is that, you know, one of his closest political allies is publicly urging him to get involved? Because surely they talk on the phone.
It begs the question of how much the communication is happening, and especially when thinking about CTU, how strongly the ties are with Johnson's background, how big of a push CTU made for his first term.
It's definitely notable that Stacey Davis Gase is pushing for. And when thinking about his legacy, back to our earlier talks, it would be more surprising than not if Johnson were to not run for a second term. And then even with the comparisons with Rahm, the difference in your legacy when you've been elected and reelected compared to just being a one-term mayor. And with Johnson in particular, should he be reelected and go into a second term, he would make history being the longest sitting black Chicago mayor. And I think that's something that's not past him.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. I would also say that let's assume Johnson and Janulius both run. It will be an interesting question about what does money mean in a Chicago mayor's race? Because if money was everything, Rajna Krishnamurthy would be packing his bags for the U.S. Senate. He is not. Juliana Stratton is. There have been many cases, you know, that has sort of, you know, that conventional wisdom has been turned on its head. Paul Vallis outspent Brandon Johnson significantly in 2023. We'll see what happens.
Whoever has the most money doesn't necessarily win.
Yeah, and Janulius, I mean, a lot of folks are talking about him as if he's a front runner, and he is in a way, because he starts with $22 million in the bank, but also he's running for re-election right now as the Secretary of State of Illinois. I remember back in 2019 when Susana Mendoza was running for re-election as controller, and but she had to kind of do the nod, nod, wink, wink, you know, I might be running for mayor, and it hurt her. And so I think Janulius is being a little more transparent about it, but that is going to be a question he's going to have to answer to of, you know, you're running for two different offices at the same time, and people might not be happy about that.
Before we let this go, real quick, I want to get to Illinois Secretary of State Alexei Janulius. He posted a video on X today alluding to something. I want to take a quick look at that. That's it. Dribbling a basketball. Michael, what's it got next?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I think everyone's eager to see what's going to happen in Bronzeville on Sunday. I think it's definitely in terms of Janulius' image as far as his past year or longer with him being, quote, an ex-hooper, I believe, on his Twitter profile.
He refers to himself as an ex-hooper.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. And, of course, it is also serves as a reminder that he is a basketball buddy of former President Barack Obama. That
hooping
is,
at the Obama Center.
That is the subtext of that. I would also say that right now Johnson is the only prospective mayoral candidate to sort of be a self-avowed progressive, whereas right now there are a lot of self-proclaimed centrists and moderates. That can play a role in a race where you're battling to be the top two finishers in the first round of voting.
Violet, before we move on, what do you think he's signaling with a basketball tweet?
Listen, I told you guys earlier.
You're a baseball girl, I know.
I think the shoes were an early signal, so I have to give credit to my colleague Ashley. But I basketball is not my realm, so I can't say much other than it seems pretty apparent at this point. Right. I mean, he's having fun with it.
He wants to pass the rock. He wants to pass the rock to the fifth floor. That's what he's looking for.
Okay, so back to Springfield. Legislative Inspector General today releasing his report, Brendan, about these allegations into sexual harassment against State Representative Harry Benton. What did we learn in this report today?
Honestly, not a lot of new information. So a lot of this came out a few weeks ago in a Chicago Tribune report about an allegation that came out a few years ago against Representative Benton that was not the one in the actual complaint, but it was used to kind of establish a pattern. And there were some details that, again, had been previously reported about Representative Benton having earlier this year an inappropriate contact with a lobbyist at a bar in Chicago. He said something to her that I can't repeat on air, but it was supposedly a few state reps heard it and reported it to the speaker's office. They filed a complaint with the LIG's office. Benton obviously got stripped of his committees, kicked out of the House Democratic Caucus, and then the report came out, it was delivered to the speaker in July, and then there's a process they have to go through to do redactions and decide if they want to release the report. They decided to release the report. It was released today. And basically, it just revealed that Representative Benton was had a kind of a pattern of bad behavior, and it kind of raised some questions about how the Speaker's office dealt with these allegations from back in 2023, why the Speaker then still supported Representative Benton in 2024 with $1.4 million in campaign funds, and then, you know, why he waited so long and why it had to be this complaint.
To the point where Representative Fred Crespo was calling on the Speaker to resign, accusing him of mishandling. How has Welch responded?
Yeah, so he hasn't responded specifically to Crespo. So Fred Crespo and Speaker Welch have a bit of history. Fred Crespo has also been booted from the caucus for different reasons, but he's saying some things that Democrats will say privately but won't say publicly about the Speaker. They're frustrated with how he's handled this process because I think the big thing was, again, the allegation back in 2023 that was detailed in great detail in the Tribune a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, why the Speaker didn't do anything then, because, you know, that would have, you know, potentially could have exposed more staff to potential sexual harassment. So there's a lot of frustration with the Speaker, and he's kind of, he's defended his office's process here, but also indicated that more could have been done. And apparently in the veto session, there will be an effort to do some reforms to make sure that when allegations come up, they're taken seriously and there's a process in place.
Violet, temporary protected status has now ended for many Haitian and Syrian immigrants, and you spoke with some members of the Haitian community in your story this week. What are people saying?
Yeah, so specifically, just to put some numbers on it, 350,000 Haitians, around 6,000 Syrians nationwide, losing temporary protected status. This comes after the Supreme Court ruled for hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans, as well as, you know, thousands from other countries last year. While we still have another million on temporary protected status that still stands but could face the same in the future. And you know, folks are scared. Folks are afraid, because in Haiti's case for temporary protected status, they had to have been here since the inciting incident that had this approved, right? So that's the 2010 Haiti earthquake. These are folks who have been, you know, building their lives for, at this point, 16 years here. They have children who are Americans, American citizens, and they are now looking to pass on legal guardianship because they have lost, you know, legal status in this country. And so it puts a lot of people in an incredibly precarious situation. But in talking with immigrant groups, they said, you know, it's no different than defending and protecting legally any other person without legal status. You know, they already have this playbook to protect folks. And they're urging people to just, you know, get in contact with immigration lawyers as soon as you can, because, you know, again, this is a very precarious situation legally.
Michael, seven Save-A-Lot stores closed their doors, leaving even fewer grocery stores available on the South and West sides. What prompted this closure?
It really was a perfect storm. You have the supplier, Ohio-based Yellow Banana. Their CEO died in April. And then on top of that, you have the Trump snap cuts that also impacted things, to where a lot of these stores were banking. Well, more or less to say their bread and butter was EBT and SNAP, WIC. And so when these cuts, people not being able to spend as much on top of a supplier that is facing financial headwinds following the death of a CEO, it's an unfortunate thing. And especially considering that back 4 years ago, the city put a total of $26 million towards these stores, 16 from city council and another 13 from the city. I mean, 13 from the city and from city council, another 13, to where you see a lot of this infrastructure that the city was working to set up with these seven stores now up in the air. And the question of how can you be able to make things sustainably, be it bringing in another supplier. Mayor Johnson announced that Lyft is putting $25,000 towards getting seniors rides to other grocery stores. But it definitely begs the question of sustainability and showing that bringing in a chain of grocery stores is not enough, because a chain could come in today and be gone tomorrow.
as we've experienced more than once in the city of Chicago. Violet, you've reported on the Women's Professional Baseball League. I guess it's a league, right? Returning to Illinois.
Yes.
It is a league. Tell us about it.
So it's returning to Springfield tomorrow. They're playing at a neutral stadium because the teams are Coastal, LA, San Francisco, Boston, and New York. And this is, you know, one of the largest attempts at a women's professional league since the League of Their Own that folks know from the movie and TV show that started in 1943 and ran through 1954. So, you know, almost 70 years. There was another attempt in the 90s that was pretty short-lived. So this is really exciting, you know, that it's coming home to Illinois again with this history, as, you know, folks have probably seen in the movie. But additionally, just this last weekend, Rockford hosted the Women's Baseball World Cup, the international analog for women's baseball. And so, you know, Illinois is really setting itself up as this home for women's baseball when there historically really hasn't been one.
Well, hopefully Chicago will be.
Fingers crossed.
We'll be one to add a team in a little bit. Okay, that is where we're going to have to leave it. Thanks to our Week in Review panel, Michael Liptrot and Heather Sharone, and Violet Miller and Brendan Moore. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. This weekend's Lollapalooza may dominate the headlines, but there are a ton of events happening across the city. Check out our website for our Chicago Summer Festival Guide. That's at WTTW.com/festivals. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, safe, and informed, and have a great weekend. Anybody going to Lollapalooza this weekend?
I was supposed to be at an after show yesterday at my friend's place, but I was working. So
the life of a journalist.
Always.
Yeah. I wanted to go, like 2 years I wanted to go, and I was told I'm too old for life. Yes. And at the time, I was like 26, 27.
You're
like,
definitely
wait,
not
I'm
too old now.
I'm a geriatric Lolla attendee.
I mean, I know that I'm too old. Nobody needs to tell me.
I've been too old since I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You've been grown since you were born, though, Heather.
Yes.
We all knew
this. Well,
my favorite way to Lolla is, you know, they stream it live on Hulu.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. We watched Somber last night because my kid is a fan. I'm super excited about Olivia Dean tomorrow night.
Olivia Dean's going
to
be big.
From the comfort of my living room.
That's the way to do it.
That is the way to do it in your 40s.
Gen X
right here.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines. PBS NewsHour, next on WTTW.
On American Experience.
They died at T-minus 10 minutes, helplessly trapped inside their spacecraft.
The fire shattered my wife's confidence in NASA and in the Apollo program.
The continuation of Chasing the Moon on American Experience.
Tonight at 9 on WTTW.
All of a sudden, there were little red flashes. We were watching Ukrainians being killed by Russians.
We're going to learn what it's like to live off this planet. But all of the aspects of life are still going to happen.
Tuesday at 8 on WTTW.
Will you be a winner in WTTW's 2026 sweepstakes? You could win a private event for 50 guests at the Barn on North at Sunny Acres Farm, including hors d'oeuvres, a full bar, and a DJ. Or you could win the grand prize, a 2027 Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid from McGrath Evanston Subaru. Enter at WTTW.com/sweepstakes today.
We are connected through stories.
Stories about love.
Family.
And discovery.
And it's magic.
It begins in your mind. It begins with your thoughts.
It's about creating again and again.
This is absolutely amazing.
Are we ready to be dazzled?
It's
so incredible here.
This place built me from the ground up.
Come on, we've got work to do.
WTTW programming originates from the Renee Crown Public Media Center. Programming on WTTW is made possible in part by the Beaverdale Foundation.
This street drove America toward revolution. This street fueled Western expansion. And this street paved the way for the shopping mall. Take a cross-country road trip on 10 streets that changed America.
Tonight at 8 on WTTW.
Hi, Chicago. I'm Patrick. You're watching WTTW.
Jeff Bennett on the NewsHour tonight. The U.S. announces a deal to disarm Hamas and withdraw Israeli troops from Gaza. But implementing the agreement could prove an enormous challenge.
Tens of thousands of migrants enter Spanish territory bordering Morocco, most then return home. A closer look at the chaotic, unprecedented crossings.
And after 5 months of war, a look at how people inside Iran are viewing the ongoing conflict.
Overall, there's sort of a feeling of despair and just feeling like they kind of got the worst of both worlds now.
Major funding for the PBS NewsHour has been provided by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. For more than 50 years, advancing ideas and supporting institutions to promote a better world. At Hewlett.org. Friends of the NewsHour, including Jim and Nancy Bildner and the Robert and Virginia Schiller Foundation. The Judy and Peter Bloom Kovler Foundation, upholding freedom by strengthening democracies at home and abroad.